You've heard me talk for years about the breakthrough health benefits of CBD. Now, our friends at CV Sciences have developed an innovative suite of non-CBD products that mimic CBD's healthful effects. CV Sciences' new Plus Health CBD-free line of gummies and capsules. The Plus Health Clarity gummies are packed with DMAE, lion's mane, and rhodiola designed to boost your cognitive performance, enhance memory, and provide natural energy. You need a little peace and calm? Plus Health's Peace Gummies, soothing blend of L-theanine, lemon balm, and St. John's wort support serenity and relaxation without the drowsiness. And if you're on a journey towards optimal health, the Reshape capsules are packed with powerful ingredients like berberine and OEA to support metabolic health and help maintain healthy blood sugar levels. For more information and to order, head over to pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman. Use coupon code Hoffman30. For 30% off. That's pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman for the new Plus Health non-CBD collection. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today with me, as usual, is Layla Mutin, who's our resident nutritionist. Together, we endeavor to answer your questions. You can send questions to questions@drhoffman.net. And so it's great to be back because I was away for a couple of weeks.
You were on a cruise.
I was cruising Alaska. And you know, I have to say that I have... I've never been on a, well, actually I have been on a cruise on a big ship. I've been on some river cruises, but I took a Viking cruise on one of their larger ships. Actually, their larger ships are actually smaller than some of the super big ships. In some of the ports in Alaska, we saw ships that could accommodate, you know, 4,000 people, just huge ships that look like, you know, like look like
it's,
floating
it's like
skyscrapers.
They have its own zip code. Those ships are so big.
Yes, they're enormous. You know, they carry more people than many small towns in USA. But, you know, this ship was a 900-person ship. I've been on some of their riverboat trips in Europe. And to cruise the waters of Alaska, they use a very beautiful boat, you know, really amazingly designed, which accommodates about 900 people. And it was really great because they, you know, took us to all the ports of interest, you know, Seward, Alaska, and Juneau and Ketchikan, and what are an interesting place called Icy Point Strait, which was a place where I went kayaking. And kayaking affords you kind of an interesting viewpoint on some of the wildlife. We saw otters, we saw whales.
Wow.
You know, I got a little worried because I thought, you know, it's pretty cool that we see whales, but I just hope they don't come up under the kayak, you know?
And, right.
You know, because they're kind of big and they could send the kayak flying. But, you know, it's when you see them at kind of eye level, it's pretty amazing. And we saw a lot of wildlife. We saw there's tons of eagles there. And what's interesting, it's kind of an environmental observation is that eagles were endangered. And one of the main reasons was that DDT became very prevalent as a disinfectant and it got into the water supply, and it seems to have an adverse effect on bird reproduction. And so remember Rachel Carlson wrote something called Silent Spring? It was like one of the first environmental books. It was like a call to action about the environment. And they ended up banning DDT, and the bird life has come back big time.
Wonderful.
We also went to a port called Valdez, where you ever hear the Exxon Valdez oil spill in the 1980s?
Yes.
You were very young then, but you might have noted that. All vestiges of the oil, the enormous amounts of oil that had spilled into that beautiful, pristine sound, have disappeared, and the wildlife has returned.
Wonderful.
There are whales. You know, we saw orcas. In another place, we saw humpbacks. Humpbacks and orcas don't coexist because orcas tend to go after the humpback's young, and the humpbacks are very, very defensive against orcas. They can't bite the orcas can bite, but the humpbacks can thump the orcas and knock them for a loop, so the orcas clear the humpbacks. So
no play time for them.
Right. We saw bears. There are plenty of bears there. And
mm-hmm. Polar?
No polar, because it's not that far north.
Yeah.
Although he said that some species of bears in Alaska are hybrids of polar bears and brown bears.
Wow.
You imagine that. That's there. You know, I guess you know, that's desegregation. You know, on an animal level.
Yes.
Is that
right?
And so we didn't see any polar bears. They're further north, but we were pretty far north. The days were long. And, you know, we saw a ton of glaciers. The glaciers there are receding, but it's not alarming because there are so many glaciers. And we actually saw one glacier that is actually enlarging. It's actually expanding. And there has been some dramatic contraction even in the last 50 years of some of these glaciers. But it seems to be, you know, when you look at it in the geologic perspective, there's evidence of lots of ebb and flow. In other words, you know, over a period of hundreds and thousands of years, the glaciers advance and recede. And so, you know, I also saw, you know, we kind of worry, like, you know, they're cutting down all the trees.
Yeah.
There are so many trees up there. Mm. It actually, the coastal area of Alaska that we cruise by is considered the second largest tropical rainforest. I'm sorry, not tropical, but it's a temperate rainforest. It's the second largest rainforest in the world. Of course, the Amazon is the largest rainforest in the world, but that's a tropical rainforest. This is a temperate rainforest. So, I mean, there's a lot of trees left pumping oxygen back in the air, taking up carbon dioxide. And, you know, I'm a little less worried. We also saw, I've never seen this before. You know, I've seen, you know, fish in a lake, you know, occasionally, and it's exciting in a stream. There's a couple of fish. I literally saw streams where you could walk across the stream on the backs of all the salmon there, like thousands of salmon.
Oh my goodness.
And they're,
wow.
They are swimming upstream. You know, that whole thing of like swimming upstream.
Yes.
They're spawning. Mm-hmm. And they actually have salmon ladders in some places where they kind of hop up, you know, they create an artificial ladder for a very steep incline, but they do hop over rocks. This is also prime feeding time for the bears because they got to fatten up before hibernation.
Yes.
And so it's
all that delicious salmon.
Interesting. Yeah. Also, a little sidelight is, you know, I was with a guide and, you know, I walked out into the woods and I said, you know, what's that smell? Is there a skunk here? And he said, no, that's not a skunk. That is something called skunk weed. And it smells a little bit like skunk or a little bit like pot, you know, like because.
Same skunk smell.
Right. Because the nickname for pot is sometimes skunk. And so he said that it's an interesting plant because the bears have learned to use it. Because the bears after hibernation, they're pretty constipated. And so they have instinctually learned to go after the skunk weed, which is a pretty effective laxative. So, hikers beware, you know, you can taste the skunk weed, but, if you have too much, you're going to have to take a day off from work the next day. So it's, you know, like interesting tidbits like that, a lot of, you know, nature and I think it's an important experience for Americans to go to Alaska because, it's a very, very fortunate asset that we have is this huge expanse of land that is, you know, it's 13% of the land mass of the United States is in that one state. And
really?
It's just enormous. It just, you know, goes on and on and on. We just saw the coastal part.
13%. Yeah. Wow.
And so we acquired it from the Russians in 1867. It was derided it by, you know, the Secretary of State at the time was named Seward, and they called it Seward's folly because they say that the Russians gypped him into paying them like, I think, $7 million for Alaska. Imagine $7 million for, like, you know, thousands of square miles.
That's it?
Yeah, that's it.
I think we got the better end of that deal. So anyway, that was a...
So they named a city after him.
Yes, Seward is a... Yeah, they named a city after him. There's also vestiges of the Alaska earthquake. It was quite a devastating earthquake with complete destruction of Valdez, Alaska, and severe damage in Anchorage and Seward. Just from the earthquake, but from a subsequent tidal wave. There was an enormous tsunami that really inundated some of these coastal communities. And the city of Valdez had to be relocated because it was on very dangerous ground. So, yeah, you know, interesting stuff. The Alaska pipeline, by the way, ends up in Valdez. So it goes up to the north shore of Alaska, hundreds of miles, and brings oil to waiting oil tankers in the Valdez Straits. And we saw that. That's kind of interesting. So, yeah, I mean, worthwhile, and cool too. Cool temperatures, not cold. It was actually, we were blessed because there's hundreds of inches of rain in these coastal regions every year. Hundreds of inches.
Wow.
And we, I think we had a couple of days where there was a little rain, a little drizzle. I brought all kinds of rain gear and, you know, long underwear. Didn't have to use it.
That's good. Sounds like a wonderful trip, Dr. Hoffman.
Yeah, it was indeed. It was very memorable. And, you know, I'd go back in a heartbeat because, you know, there's so much to explore up there. So anyway, let's get to questions. You know, let's get down to business because, yeah, we're back and we're back for a long stretch, not going anywhere for a while. Yep. And we have, over the couple of weeks that I was away, we have quite a few questions from people who sent questions to questions@drhoffman.net. So let's take it away with questions.
Yeah, we've got a question here from Chris. Can you comment on whether high vitamin D might contribute to high creatinine levels? My vitamin D level came back at 100 and my creatinine is 1.43. My creatinine has run a little high in the past 6 years. I take 10,000 units of vitamin D daily and I have for years. And I've read that this may increase creatinine. Do you agree?
Okay, so I, you know, I happen to know this questioner. He is a patient, and he is a young type 1 diabetic. Generally, when we look at creatinine, it's a measure of kidney function.
Yeah.
And the concern in a diabetic is diabetics often end up with dialysis. They end up because of elevated blood sugar, they end up with progressive decline in their kidney function. Creatinine goes up, 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 and they ultimately have kidney failure and they require dialysis. I don't think that this is pertinent to this situation because I know this guy. He is very athletic. He consumes a high amount of dietary protein and he's on a low-carb diet. So the higher your muscle mass and the more protein you consume, the higher your creatinine can be. And it's also sometimes a breakdown product of high levels of exercise. You know, so if you're pumping iron in the gym and he's a pretty muscular guy, your creatinine might be a little bit higher. Or alternatively, you might be a little dehydrated and that can cause that to happen. Now, the vitamin D, you know, certainly vitamin D is important for diabetics. I would like to keep vitamin D south of 100. So the suggestion for him, and I think we made that suggestion to him already, is, you know, cut back. Don't stop, but, you know, cut back, maybe alternate to 5,000, alternating with 10,000, you know, keep it high in the 70s or 80s. I have actually seen some patients who have vastly exceeded 100. And when we've checked them 6 ways to Sunday, they've not experienced any kind of harm. They haven't had kidney stones, but better safe than sorry. Keep that vitamin D under 100. And so that would be my advice to him. Yeah, that's
Chris
about
has
it.
Chris has another question, actually.
Sure. Okay.
When is the best time to take MitoPure powder? I took it at dinner after a workout and I couldn't get to sleep. Am I supposed to take it earlier in the day?
Okay. So MitoPure is a mitochondrial support supplement. It's urolithin A.
Yeah.
And I take it, and I take it earlier in the day usually, or sometimes I take it towards the end of the day, you know, because it's a powder and I put it in a shake that I take in the morning. Or alternatively, I may put it in with some coconut yogurt and some fruit, you know, because it dissolves nicely in that. And I've not noticed any stimulant effect for it because, I mean, there's some energy producing substances that, you know, have an immediate effect, like caffeine, obviously.
Sure.
But this is an energy producing supplement that has a subtle effect over time. And so I would more attribute that to late night exercising, because I think that's one of the ways that you kind of stimulate yourself later in the day. And for people who have sleep issues, sometimes
best moving exercise earlier
to earlier is better. Yeah. I've made that suggestion quite a few times to patients who have sleep problems. I said, well, when do you exercise? Well, you know, I exercise after work or, you know, and, you know, sometimes you kind of get your nervous system stimulated from exercise, the sympathetic nervous system, and it's harder to get into a relaxation state because it takes a while for it to calm down.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, so I would, you know, I wouldn't imagine, I mean, look, there's certainly a placebo effect. You're taking something for energy and you think, oh my goodness, you know, like it's boosting my energy. I would say, I tend to never disregard a patient's report because there are normal reactions, common reactions, and there are what are called idiosyncratic reactions. Some people are very sensitive to certain things. And we have to give credence to their reports.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Now might be a good time.
I was thinking
Hoffman,
that. I was thinking that.
Yeah. To allow our sponsors to bring you some important information.
So let's hear it. Listen up.
Are you tired of feeling tired? Do you wish you could turn back the clock on aging? NT-Factor Lipids is the breakthrough supplement that's scientifically proven to repair and renew your body's cells. NT-Factor Lipids are identical to the phospholipids found in your cellular membranes. They've been shown to repair mitochondrial damage, a primary cause of biological aging. In clinical trials, NT-Factor therapy resulted in a 26.8% increase in mitochondrial function, restoring it to levels found in young adults. NT-Factor has also been shown to reduce fatigue by up to 43% and has even been shown to significantly reduce a wide range of symptoms and improve the quality of life in patients with various conditions like chronic fatigue and those undergoing chemotherapy. I've been using NT-Factor for years and prescribe it for my patients. You can find the NT-Factor line of nutritional formulas at your favorite health food store or online retailer. Or to order direct, call 800-982-9158, 800-982-9158, or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. They, of course, are what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now back to today's questions. What's next, Lila?
Okay. We've got from Nancy. My daughter had gastric bypass surgery 5 years ago. She now suffers from gastric reflux, and she believes she will have to continue taking a proton pump inhibitor for life. Is there something she could use as an alternative?
So
that's a tough one.
Yeah, what I have to say is that we're pretty successful at alleviating the need for these acid-blocking things. In patients who are structurally intact, but some people have had gastric bypass. So what that means is you have a much smaller stomach, and the stomach fills up, and then it kind of overflows and it backs up.
Yeah,
and so you're more likely to get GERD or reflux. I think the answer for that is to accommodate your symptoms by simply eating smaller meals at more frequent times.
which is the common advice after any kind of bariatric surgery like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. And now Nancy's daughter needs to go further. I would recommend a GERD diet.
Yes.
You know,
mm-hmm.
lean back on that chocolate or tomato product, coffees and teas that are very acidic, fatty or spicy foods, things of that nature that will exacerbate GERD.
Exactly. I think that is prudent because, I mean, you're creating an artificial circumstance that limits your intake of food. And the blowback that you get when you consume more is pain, distension, you know, sour taste in your mouth or
nausea and vomiting.
Yeah.
Even, you know, at least in the beginning for those who are new to, I mean, she's already gotten past, you know, she's had her gastric bypass surgery 5 years ago. So she's gotten past any immediate side effects that might have been worrisome, like infection or bleeding at the site or anything like that. I wrote a little bit about this in our Intelligent Medicine newsletter article a couple of weeks ago addressing this question. But there was another circumstance that I do need to bring up. And this young man, he was otherwise very healthy. He didn't have any bariatric surgery or anything like that.
Right.
His GERD, his reflux, was simply because of his posture.
Oh, wow.
And when he straightened up, it was life-changing.
Wow, he shared with you that?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the GERD was gone.
Wow.
Because invariably what would happen, he worked in an office, he was an executive, and he would be hunched over on his desk, on his computer keyboard, hunched over.
Right.
And of course, this would also happen after lunch.
Right. As you say that, I'm you know, unconsciously
straightening up as I say that
because I am a little bit hunched over. Yeah, that's interesting because it's postural. It's postural also, especially at bedtime after a late meal. These are some of the strategies that ordinary people can adopt. But I think having gastric bypass compounds that problem. There are also people who have esophageal surgery for GERD, and those people... often the surgery is not a complete fix and they continue to have symptoms and they're actually harder to treat, I find, than people who've not undergone surgery.
Yeah. So Nancy's writing us all the way from Perth, Australia.
Oh, wow.
We've got people all over the world listening to the Intelligent Medicine podcast.
Well, no wonder she has GERD. I mean, she's upside down, you know, and she's just...
Nancy, thank you for your question.
Don't those folks hang upside down like bats down there? I mean, how do they keep from falling off the end of the earth?
Okay, we're going to lose listeners. No, I'm joking.
By the way, I was impressive about my trip to Alaska. There were a lot of Australians, and they're such intrepid travelers that they go away for months at a time because it's such a big deal to travel. It took them like, you know, it takes them like 20 hours to fly to Alaska.
Oh my goodness!
And so one anecdote is we were kayaking and there were a group of us and there were a couple of Aussie gals in a kayak. And they shouted, while, and I and I shouted back, "What's a while?"
You didn't. You did.
I did. Okay. I did. And they laughed. They laughed.
Oh my goodness! Yeah. Did you see the while?
I saw the while. I saw the while.
Okay. Good. Oh my goodness! All right. Okay. So we've got a question here from Cece. I have listened to you, Dr. Hoffman, for decades, starting when you took over the Carlton Frederick show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
That was, wow, my goodness, that's like back in the 1980s. Yeah.
Yeah.
The late, great Carlton Fredericks passed away. And within a few months, you know, they decided the slot was open and they said, let's try the new kid.
Wow. Oh, and the rest is history.
Yep.
Okay. So Cece says, I'm very worried about my husband. He's 5'10", 150 pounds.
Okay.
A runner, a hiker, a biker, advanced skier.
That's quite a normal weight. You know, I'm actually the same height, and I'm 170. 5'10" is a little bit. 5'10", 150 is that's a slim guy, pretty slim.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. He started having heaviness in his chest, but only when running uphill in the heat or biking up a steep uphill.
Mm-hmm.
He has a calcium score of 121.
Mm-hmm.
And his diagnosis is atherosclerosis of the coronary artery without angina pectoris, right bundle branch block.
Well, hang tight there.
So,
the diagnosis and the presenting symptoms are at variance, because he does seem to have exertional chest pressure or pain. And so I wonder if he's had a proper stress test or if he's had a proper echocardiogram to see if he has a valvular problem, because that's another reason why he can become breathless. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, his cardiologist gave him a CT angiogram, coronary arteries with fractional flow reserve and echocardiogram.
That sounds a little like the Cleerly test. Yeah. Okay.
So his calcium score in one artery is 121. Well, Cece says the discussion with the cardiologist ended with agreement that he should take red yeast rice. However, it did not help.
Okay.
Cardiologist wants to lower his LDL from 109 to 70.
Yeah.
And the cardiologist recommended plant sterols since my husband does not want statins right now.
Yeah.
We are awaiting a stress test in 2 months.
Okay.
I know, Dr. Hoffman, that you sometimes say it's better to take the statin.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think, in an abundance of caution, I'm not that big a fan of red yeast rice because I think it's sort of like a weak statin anyway. It's, less potent. And sometimes there's difficulties with the standardization of it, so at least when you get a medication, you generally get what the label reflects. And if you do have plaque, and especially if the stress test is confirmatory of circulatory problems with exertion, you need to get on the stick. And this is actually the best case for use of a statin is in someone who demonstrably has plaque and has, some degree of circulatory impairment. Look, statins are not 100%. They can cause side effects, but mostly they're well tolerated. And demonstrably, they do reduce the risk of a heart attack or stroke in people at risk. Now, if he had that test and, he was fine and the stress test is fine and there's no plaque whatsoever, it's a waste of time. It's a waste of time. But here's what they do now is, I call this cholesterol limbo. It's like, how low can you go? You remember Chubby Checker? He would go under the, under the limbo. This popular in the, 60s or something. They have changed the guidelines for people who have cardiovascular risk. They want your LDL under 70. Okay.
Yeah.
Which is where studies have shown that there's greater benefit than getting it under 100. Now, an ordinary person, I mean, my LDL is 130-something, which is considered alarmingly high. But look at the context. The context is I have zero plaque. When you have zero plaque, it's much less consequential. So, cholesterol isn't something that you have to lower invariably, in my opinion. It's merely something that, statins have a protective effect in people who have high cardiovascular risk. If people have no cardiovascular risk or minimal cardiovascular risk, they have minimal benefits.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. CC, there you go. And once you do the stress test and take it from there, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Best of health to you and your husband. Oh, let's see here. This comes to us from, I don't have a name.
No name.
Dr. Hoffman, I trust you explicitly, and I hope you can guide me here. I'm a 59-year-old male. I try to help myself naturally in order to keep costs down. I've been on a low-carb, low-sugar diet now for 16 months. I fast 18 hours daily, and my fasting blood glucose
That's time-restricted eating, intermittent fasting. Okay, great, which is good.
Mm-hmm. My fasting blood glucose is 95 to 100. Everything is fine as long as I eat a low-carb diet.
Right.
I typically stay under 140 at all times. But boy, if I have a piece of cake or, heaven forbid, some pasta, I quickly shoot up to over 180 or 190 in my blood sugar. This has not improved over the 16 months with my low-carb diet. Will it always be like this? I was hoping for a better blood glucose response from now. I'm 5'9", 175 pounds. I'm very active. Typically, I achieve 18,000 steps a day.
Ooh,
I
weight
train most days.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. My only other anomaly, he says, is a kidney EGFR rating of 80 consistently over 2 years.
That's fine. That's fine.
And a high red blood cell count. I've been pre-diabetic most of my adult life, not knowing.
Yeah.
Well,
okay,
this is the reason.
Okay, yeah. So here's the deal. I mean, I think people have to realize that dietary therapy is sometimes forever. You know, like, you know, some people say, I'm fine on this GERD diet. How come I can't go out and have a pepperoni pizza? You know, it just, I'm in agony after I do that. Well, you know, it's kind of like you've discovered the paradigm that, you know, yields relief from pain, but it hasn't eliminated the underlying susceptibility. And the same thing occurs in individuals who are prone to diabetes. You can sometimes increase your tolerance for things that you weren't able to tolerate before. You know, have a little bit. It's like I could have a piece of birthday cake or something, and then get back on the wagon once a year, you know. But generally, you regress when you resume your previous eating habits, right?
Exactly. And 16 months is not enough time if he's been pre-diabetic most of his adult life.
That too.
Not
that
knowing.
Too. That too. 5 years hence, it may be a different story, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So the thing is to be on a low-carb diet, really, for the most part, really, for the rest of your life.
It's a lifestyle.
And plan your cheats accordingly.
It's a lifestyle.
Based on your carbohydrate tolerance, really.
Yeah.
More than anything.
Yeah, and remember
doing
that,
the intermittent fasting is helpful.
Remember, there's no RDA for carbohydrates.
No, it's true.
You can actually subsist without them. I mean, it's hard to avoid them in real life, but, you know, in terms of macronutrients, you know, fats and protein are essential. But when it comes to carbs, for some people, the less the better.
True. True. We're starting to call it carbohydrate toxicity.
Yeah.
As we become even more and more aware that this is not the diet we should be on, eating all of these carbohydrates. I mean, it's relatively new.
Yeah.
But over the past few hundred years, and to be this refined and processed. Especially. So it's a lot right there.
Good stuff.
We're basically poisoning ourselves with too many carbs.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. This is a good point to which to pause because we're going to part two. Layla, give us a preview of the questions we're going to answer in part two.
Well, I've heard you talk about the benefits of using a rebounder, but I'm also a senior and I sit on my exercise ball and bounce every day. Is this helpful? Does it still get your lymph going?
Okay.
And we could talk about rebounders a little more.
Absolutely.
There's a safe one to get.
Yeah. Good concept. All right. When we return, more of today's Q&A with Layla. Questions come to drhoffman.net. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.